Less is more in terms of maintaining your skin.
Maybe we're all just overdoing everything.
There are simple things you can do. I tell people every day when you're in the shower, don't use a lot of soap, rinse off, and exfoliate.
Welcome to The Genius of Wellness, a podcast brought to you by Hopkins Medical Group, serving patients in Greater Boston with a personalized approach to healthcare, both in person and through telemedicine. Learn more and schedule an appointment at thegeniusofwellness.org. I'm Ted Canova. It's no secret, as we age, our skin changes. Lines, acne, tight and rough patches. But instead of avoiding a mirror, listen to Dr. Pat Hopkins and her colleagues Leslie Frodema and Maura Hines share their personal skin stories, along with simple ways to save our skin. Pat, the pandemic and the quarantine sure did a number on our bodies. We got less exercise, our diet suffered, but what did these months inside do to our skin?
A lot of people kind of slid down the path of sweatpants. When we go out, we wear a mask, so maybe we're not taking care of our skin. And then there's the occlusion of the mask on our face. And so we kind of had kind of the sloppy Joe months inside. And I think people are at this point ready to say, okay, I need to look good. In fact, you know, we're having a wedding this Saturday and people are socially getting back together. So we want to help patients and all of the people that are in our community get their skin back and get their shape back.
Well, congratulations on the family nuptials. Leslie, you're a functional nurse nutritionist, and you've been fond of saying that the health of our skin reflects the health of our underlying organs. Can you explain that a little bit more?
In Oriental diagnosis, there's a principle that the outermost reflects the innermost. So when you look at the outermost part of the body, the skin, you're actually being given a window into the health of what lies deep within, the underlying organs. This has been a guiding principle in Oriental diagnosis for 1,000 years, and it's fascinating to see Western medicine now verify through science that yes, indeed, the skin can tell you about what is happening inside the body. For example, doctors now know that dark, velvety patches of skin on the back of your neck and under arms can be one of the earliest signs of prediabetes, and they look for it. Another example is something we commonly see in the office. Patients who are referred to us because they have a rash on both cheeks, and the referring doctor wants us to rule out lupus, an autoimmune disease which often has a characteristic butterfly rash on the face across the cheeks. Lupus is rare, and the vast majority of time the patient doesn't have it, but the rash does signal to us that they have digestive issues. And the patient's always surprised that without doing a GI history, we can describe what is going on in their digestive system and what this rash that they've had on their face for years really means. It's signaling an underlying digestive issue, which we then can help them address.
Leslie, that's interesting. Pat, I was kind of surprised to read that our largest organ is our skin. How did you become interested in skincare in your medical practice?
I think there were two turning points. The first one was as an intern when I had a patient admitted, a young girl, 18 years old, to the hospital with an undiagnosed autoimmune disease. So she had terrible rashes, what we call urticaria, and skin rashes and itchiness. It was driving her crazy. And the biopsy showed that she had what we call a vasculitis, which can be life-threatening if it affects your organs. And I kind of returned to the lab, you know, after hours and started looking at her blood and developed a test which identified, in fact, she had antibodies to gluten. And that was a real wake-up call for me as an intern, and that really set the path, which was, wow, an autoimmune disease presents in an 18-year-old with no GI symptoms at all, and it was a gluten sensitivity. So I became very interested in the immune system. The second part of my life was my skin changed. So as I hit the perimenopause, early menopause, suddenly I had rosacea, and I would look in the mirror and go, what the heck? I never had a pimple when I was a kid, and now the hormonal changes in my body were clear as the nose on my face, literally. So I went back to my fundamentals of skin and went back into training with Zain Obagi, who is a dermatologist in California, and took a number of courses with him because I wanted to know what works and I didn't want to waste time or money on things that didn't work. And those were the two pivotal points in my career.
Mara Hines, you're a nurse practitioner with a story to tell. You've had psoriasis and sun-related skin cancer. Were these surprises to you when you were diagnosed, and what contributed to each of them?
Yeah, so my story involves being diagnosed with skin cancers at a fairly young age, in my very early 30s. And some of the risk factors that I had for getting basal cell and squamous cells that required surgeries over the last few years were a strong family history. My parents did not have these types of cancers, but my grandfather did, and sun exposure. I had typical probably sun exposure as a child, and then in high school started to use the tanning beds periodically for proms and special occasions, and then continued to lay out in the sun and through my college years, and was surprised when I was diagnosed with a basal cell, or a few of them actually, my first trip to the dermatologist in my very early 30s. So I've clearly done a lot of damage to my skin. And since I was diagnosed, I've been very aware and been wearing sunblock and hats. And then when it came to Dr. Hopkins' office, I really came more interested in not only protecting my skin from future damage, but how to rejuvenate my skin. The other story I have to tell about my skin is that I have some moderate psoriasis, mostly on my elbows and knees. And I have treated it periodically with topical steroids, and it would come and go. In the summer, it's actually not a huge issue because the sun seems to really help it settle down. But in the winter, it does become itchy and uncomfortable, painful at times. So I would use topical steroids. And then through working here with Dr. Hopkin and Leslie, I would hear Leslie tell patients to avoid gluten and dairy because what's going on in your gut affects your skin. And we know that those are inflammatory foods. So although I heard her say that, I didn't really practice what I preached, I guess, in a sense. And then last winter, I did eliminate gluten and dairy, and my skin was clear. For the first winter that I can remember, I had clear skin, and that was just from dietary changes.
Well, first of all, we've come a long way from using baby oil as suntan lotion, which was common in the 60s and the 70s. Thank goodness, right? I use 50 SPF, and my son says that after 30, I'm just wasting my money. Is that true?
It is true. What people don't understand is that you need to reapply. So 50 is a blocker, so it's 30. But the real number here is how long is it on your skin for, and how much protection are you getting? So when we talk about products that are efficacious, let me tell you, if you're getting something that is not staying on, isn't waterproof, doesn't have the oxides in it, you're going to run out of time pretty quickly with your whatever you're putting on it. So I don't even recommend overuse of skin block. So I've gone from sunblock to sunblock clothing, and I only use sunblock on my face when I'm outside for a prolonged period of time. And I think that's the important thing, is to get used to wearing long sleeves.
That's a killjoy at the beach, Pat.
Well, how many hours do you stay at the beach? You know, you're in the water, you get under your umbrella, you know, staying at the beach for 5 hours, laying out on your blanket, it's probably not the right move. And probably what protected me were many redheads in our family. And my only buy from having skin cancer is that I would get hives in the sun. So I was essentially allergic to sun. So when I was a little kid, yes, I was the long sleeve kid under the umbrella, or I was in the water. I just was never a sunbather.
One of the interesting things I learned is that skin types don't change, but skin conditions do.
Yes, the skin is a living organ. We kind of think of it as just being there as our protective coat, holding us together and protecting us from heat and cold and bacteria and germs. But it does so much more than that. Our skin is also, for example, an immune organ. There are specialized immune cells that live in the skin and recognize foreign organisms and send out messages to stimulate the body to fight or create an allergic response to something that it encounters. The skin is home to more than 1,000 species of bacteria. It has its unique microbiome that we are just beginning to understand, both in terms of its composition and the functions it carries out for the body. And yes, of course, nutrition has a huge role in the health of our skin. As Moore just pointed out in her personal experience with psoriasis, the foods we eat can trigger skin conditions, and removing them from the diet can also help the skin conditions heal. So when patients come to us seeking a more natural approach to managing their psoriasis or their eczema, we have to look at diet and take out the most common food triggers. This is called an elimination diet, which we've guided many patients through. Just a reminder, we've also launched a very good podcast recently by Tom O'Tare talking about elimination diets, and people might want to re-listen to that. So eliminating common food triggers like gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, peanuts is one factor, but we also need to make sure the skin has nutrients. The antioxidants, the phytonutrients, building blocks like zinc, vitamin C and E, essential fatty acids. And this brings us all back to a healthy, nutrient-dense, plant-strong diet.
Hi, it's Ted, taking a second to remind you that The Genius of Wellness is your place for interesting podcasts, tips for living a healthier life, and doctors who provide a personalized approach to healthcare. You can find it all, plus schedule an appointment at thegeniusofwellness.org. Now back to our conversation. Pat, there's a phrase called transition skin that I have never heard about. And this has to do with, I guess, our skin in transition as we age, from being kids to teenagers to adults to menopause. Can you talk a little bit about transition skin?
We go through periods of our life. We remember adolescence, when you got your first pimple. You know, we're exquisitely sensitive to hormonal changes. And to Leslie's point, the number of estrogen byproducts in dairy is what's leading these young kids to, really a crisis in their skin management. And you can imagine how sensitive it is to go through high school with cystic acne, blackheads, greasy skin. All of, the unfriendly terms that we might be have been tossed at us through high school. And then things seem to even out. But, that brings in the environmental risk that we're all at, in that we are having to deal with, one, the estrogens in our food, two, the antibiotics in our food, and three, that while in Europe 15,000 chemicals are banned from products that we apply to our skin, in the United States, they are allowed. So we have a big environmental burden. The next transition comes when you're going through menopause. So we kind of reach our 20s and things should stable out through your 20s and 30s. And then as you hit your 40s, whether it's malopause or menopause, you'll start to see skin elasticity change. You might suddenly have rosacea. You'll get changes in the texture of your skin, the hydration. And the skin starts to, while it loses elasticity, it also builds up dead skin on the surface. So you'll start to see vascular blushes. Basically, your skin's looking for oxygen. So how do we mitigate those changes in our skin? As I said, when I hit the perimenopausal phase in my late 40s, I was suddenly like, this isn't the skin I was meant to have. How do I find a path, both through diet, but also what were the products I was going to use on my skin that were going to mitigate those? And there are about 4 active ingredients for our skin. The rest all comes from within. So when I went through menopause, I realized I was going to go to a journey. How was I going to change from within, but also what were the active ingredients for rejuvenation of my skin?
In one of your last newsletters, you had an article called 6 Things Your Skin Says About Your Health by Prevention Magazine. And I was surprised to see different specialists, from gynecologists to a diabetes doctor, talk about specific things that they look for. Leslie, earlier you mentioned what a diabetes doctor may look for, but Mara, a gynecologist looks for different things also. Can you speak to that a little bit?
So the things that we commonly see as people age, or changes in the skin as people age, are skin can become drier, we notice more fine lines and wrinkles, changes in texture. We can know some age pigment changes, some dark spots, rosacea or melasma. But these all can be managed with the right product.
Pat, in our next episode, we're going to talk about what works with skincare, and we're going to introduce tools and products, talk about diets. Leslie touched on the elimination diet, and also laser therapy. But before that episode, are there some simple things that people could do to take care of their skin?
There's not a silver bullet, whether we're talking about dementia, memory loss, or our skin. You have to remove environmental insults. You have to remove inflammatory insults. You have to rejuvenate the skin. And there are simple things you can do. I tell people every day, when you're in the shower, don't use a lot of soap. Rinse off and exfoliate. Take a loofah brush, brush your skin. It increases not only the hydration, it increases the oxygenation, you increase your blood flow. Sweating is a great detox. When you're out running and you drench through your clothes, you're sweating out environmental toxins, heavy metals, lead, mercury, aluminum, all of these things that are a challenge to our system. So in our integrative approach, it's not one shoe fits all. It's not one program fits all. We don't have protocols. We have individualized attention.
I would like to add a simple message to what Dr. Hopkins just said, and that message is, in terms of your skin and skincare products, less is more. Remember that when you have this unique microbiome in your skin, that it's really as important as the microbiome in your gut. We've educated our patients a lot, and I think there's a general awareness now about the need to take care of our gut microbiome through taking probiotics and reducing chemicals and pesticides in the food we eat, minimizing antibiotic use, and so forth. But now we need to apply these same principles when we think about the microbiome of the skin, meaning don't overdo the hand sanitizers, which I know can be hard in these COVID times. Don't overdo the steroid creams, the topical antibiotics. Don't even overwash your skin. The microbiome is an integral part of the skin, which is playing an integral role in our overall health. I just would like to point out the Environmental Working Group, if you go to ewg.org, has an excellent database called Skin Deep. It's got information about the quality of skincare, products, hair care products, sunscreens, baby products. It's really worth checking out. But the message overall is keep it simple, keep it natural. Read the labels on your personal care products and scrutinize them just like you do the labels in the grocery store. And remember, less is better.
Maura, some closing thoughts?
My final thoughts on this, Ted, are to make sure that we're wearing a wide brim hat and investing in a good sunblock for your face. Of course, we need sunblock everywhere, but the skin on our face is what's exposed to the sun the most, and not just when you're sitting at the beach for the day, but when you're outside mowing your lawn or watching your kids in the swings or at a baseball game, the wide brim hat really protects the skin on your face. And I have to say, that's what I've noticed has been the most helpful to me in keeping my skin out of the sun and preventing sunburns, is making sure I always have my hat on when I'm outside.
Right. Get the wide brim hats. You don't realize with baseball cap that the sides of your face, your neck, you're getting sun exposure all the time. And overdoing products can actually lead to acne and eczema because you're occluding your pores. We'll talk about products in our next podcast. But covering up, using light clothing, for tennis, Ted, I know you're a big tennis player. I hope you're out there with your long sleeve shirts on. I play golf. I wear a long sleeve shirt all the time, and I bought the wide brim hat this year, and I've gotten used to going around with shade all around me.
Pat, Leslie, Maura, we look forward to the next episode where we talk about what works and what folks could do. Thanks for joining us again.
Thank you, Ted.
Thanks, Ted.
Thank you, everyone.
And thank you for listening to The Genius of Wellness. If you like our podcast, do us a favor. Share it with your friends and family. Give us a bunch of stars and write a review on this podcast channel. All those things will help more people find us. The Genius of Wellness is brought to you by Hopkins Medical Group, serving patients in Greater Boston with a personalized approach to healthcare, both in person and through telemedicine. Learn more and schedule an appointment at thegeniusofwellness.org. I'm Ted Canova. See you next time.